It happens every year around mid-October. My preaching forums and online groups that I belong to begin to send out articles concerned with only one thing, the headline saying, "How to make your Christmas preaching fresh and original." And I think even the authors of the articles have to be smiling somewhat when they write them. Original? Fresh? It's the greatest story ever told, but it's also one of the oldest stories ever told. We think we really are original, let alone fresh. As a preacher, I have to admit that the desire to be fresh, to be original, to stand up here each year and try to give you something you've never heard before, has to do more with my fragile ego and wanting to impress you, to make you think that I know what I'm talking about. 32 years of preaching, though, there are at least 32 sermons or devotions in my files. So the years or the times don't sound like much when it's looked at that way, but each one is a year. Christmas, it comes each year, and with all that it entails in life, it's the same in church. It can be seen as welcome, a welcome old friend that visits once a year. Important enough that it changes the flow of worship. Certainly it changes the decoration. But sometimes it may interrupt or disrupt the life of the church and what's going on. And not that that isn't good. Is there a year or any other year in recent memory that we can think of where we would like Christmas to be a disruption of the year that we've experienced? The last couple of years for me, though, instead of disrupting or ending, say, a sermon series or study in order to explore Christmas again, it has appealed to me more to see where Christmas fits in right now, where we are and where we have been. We've been looking at this group of people that gathered around Jesus when he was alive on the earth and asked him, "How long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Christ, then why not tell us plainly?" I wanted to end this series. We've been on it for a little while, and I did want to end this series with Jesus' answer to these people. The answer was, "I told you. I have told you, and you do not believe. The works I do in my Father's name, these testify of me. But you do not believe because you are not of my sheep." What's ironic about that answer is that these people felt they were exactly his sheep. They were the church of the day who supposedly knew everything about the Messiah. And here he was standing in front of them, having to plea and testify to the church that he is who he claims to be. He says, "It's the work, though. It's not my words. It's the work, it's the power that Jesus has as God that he uses to care for his sheep. This is what made him unrecognizable to those who claimed to know who he was. Yes, he means the miracles and the signs that he has performed, and we can list them up until now. But one thing we're reminded of at Christmas that we may not realize throughout our preaching and studying year is the one overarching work or sign that he has made a requirement for all others to happen, and that is he needs to be present in order to perform them. It was so in the beginning. What makes the difference in the beginning or even before the beginning is his presence. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, the first words of Scripture say to us, the earth was a formless void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. In the beginning, before the words were spoke, there was what? Nothing. A void, a space aching to be filled. There was a nothing. Before the beginning, there was nothing. He desires to fill the void. Fill the void with what, you might ask? And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. Light. As soon as the word is spoken, light appears. And when light appears, the void disappears. The nothingness disappears because it is no longer nothingness. It's now somethingness. It's light. The absence of dark. Light? Not light as we know it. Not artificial light in our rooms. Not even what we call the natural light. The sun, the moon, and the stars. That doesn't come until day four. We sometimes miss that there is night and day even before there were sun, moon, and stars. Light on day one has to have something other than light. And on day four, it can only be one thing. The light that obliterates the nothing is Him. It's God. It's His presence. The words announce His presence. Where there once was nothing, now there is presence of God. He's the difference between light and dark. Day and night. Nothing and something. His Spirit, His presence, His Holy Spirit. Creation is the one filling of the void with His presence. Creating life out of nothing. Even the narrative is a progression. He shows up all at once, but how it works through the creation is a progression. On day one, the difference between night and day, the difference between light and dark. There's a difference between void and filled. That's what happens on day one. On day two, sky and earth. He divides the geography. There is a change now in the geography, a place of His presence. Day three, land and sea. He makes the geography more compatible to Him, to His presence, to His life. He changes the environment of the geography. His presence is personalizing the space, preparing it appears, for something. Seeds, plants, trees, fruit, beauty, yes, but food? Who's He preparing it for? Day four, come the lights. The sun, the moon, and the stars, so that we can know seasons and times. Day four is about time. The presence creates time, a day-to-day, a week-to-week, a month-to-month, a year-to-year presence. Day four is about time will pass, but my presence will not. Day five, all sea creatures, big and small, sea monsters, Genesis says. The big ones and even the little ones. His presence gets to swim now. He likes to swim. And the birds in the air. His presence gets to fly. But He's still not done. Doesn't seem to be done. He's still not there. Then there's these one creatures that He pronounces words over that He does not pronounce over any other creature in creation that will hold His presence. These, He says, humanity, let us create them in our image, He tells the Trinity. And He breathes into them the breath of life. He forms them with His hands and He breathes into them the breath of life. And His presence is in them and not anything else. He is present. Finally, He is at home. And day seven is the first day that His presence is wholly devoted to them. The brand new presence of God, wholly devoted to them, to be with them, to just be in them. Nothing else to do. My work is done. He says to His creature, king and queen, you now I want to be with. His presence is life versus death. As long as He is present there, there will be life, there will be light. The only requirement of life versus death is that He is present. And the only requirement that goes to that is that life is in only God, our Creator. And He puts only one requirement on that. When He created us in His image, it would be that we are the only creatures that have free will. That we would be able to choose whether we live or die. We would be able to choose whether we want to be in His presence or not in His presence. Free will, choice. The one thing, the only thing required in order to be able to love and to be loved. Love would be the governing power over this universe, ordained by the Creator. He made his choice. He chose to give his presence, to be present. His creatures, of course, made another. They decided to limit his presence in their lives. They hide from him. They run from him. They eventually try to leave him behind. If you slowly or not so slowly eliminate the lights, you will eventually be left with the darkness. If you slowly or not so slowly push out the something, you will eventually be left with nothing. And if you limit or eventually eliminate the presence of life, you now have death. I have to tell you that as a preacher, this progression did not show itself to me, did not come to me until one day I was preparing a funeral sermon. This came to me as I was trying to bring comfort to our family because one of our family had died. They'll become emptier, his children, as they seek to fill the void with all manner of other things. We run from him, which leaves a void, which means we must fill the void with something else. And mankind has spent thousands of years trying to come up with what would fill that void. God, though, desperately, lovingly, seeks another way. See, John begins his gospel this way. In the beginning was the Word. As a matter of fact, it doesn't sound so much different from Genesis, does it? Sounds exactly like Genesis. In the beginning was the Word. In the beginning, when God created the heaven and the earth, he spoke words. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. John begins his gospel at the beginning, or actually like Genesis, he begins before the beginning. Before the Word, there was what? Nothing. A void. But he was in the beginning with God. His presence was the only existence before the beginning. The Word manifested itself in the beginning when he spoke. Creation happened. And John even tells us, it continues, all things came into being through him. And apart from him, nothing came into being or that has come into being. In him was life. And the life was the light of all men. The first word spoken. In the beginning, there was nothing. And God spoke, let there be light. In him was life as opposed to death. In him was light as opposed to darkness. He is the something from the nothing. He is the filling of the void. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness doesn't understand it, does not comprehend it. Darkness can't imagine. Darkness can't cope. The one thing darkness cannot fight is the presence of light. You want darkness to disappear, turn on the light. After millennia of the light being pushed aside, replaced by the results of the selfishness of us, even replaced by religion that claims to worship the light, eventually God's people even try to replace him with what they think is him. But we still don't comprehend. God pronounces his presence once and for all. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. His glory, glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. See, to a world that was founded fundamentally on his love and his presence, And a world that rejected that very presence, he comes to live again, limiting himself to becoming one of us, simply to walk and to talk with us, and in the process, to save and to restore us, in the process, to shine his light into our darkness, and to make our nothing something. The true light which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become the children of God, who were born not of blood, not of the will of the flesh, but or the will of man, but of the will of God. So those he came to save ask, how long will you keep us in suspense? If you're the Christ, tell us plainly. The answer comes on a night to a world that seems to have no room for him. A night illumined, yes, by stars and a moon, and this night even angels, messengers announcing the good news. God speaks again, but this time the voice sounds not so unfamiliar. It's not the voice of the Father crying out, let there be light, but this time it's a baby crying in the middle of nowhere. A baby that will grow. A baby that will grow up to tell these people who don't believe that we, that was not a Freudian slip, who do not believe that we know what we're talking about. He tells us, I have told you. I have told you. And I have to say that him becoming one of us in order to save us, because he loves us that much, that's as plain as the answer gets. They don't hear him. They don't believe him. The Word become flesh. God become the Son of Man. Our question is, do we? Our question is, will we believe the answer when we hear it? So basics, fundamentals, original, fresh? Nah. Millennia old. Older than time. And thanks to him, for us, time could be no more. If we would hear the answer. Because every Christmas, the answer comes out loud and as plain as it gets.